This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Summer, for many people, is the one season where they can take time to really dig into a book. And whether your idea of the perfect summer read is an escapist romance or a serious biography tome, here in New Hampshire, just about every local library and bookstore has summer reading recommendations. For example, if returning to a favorite author as part of your vacation routine, summer 2016 offers new novels from star writers like Don DeLillo, Richard Russo, and Annie Proulx. But if your mood is to seek a new fiction favorite, well, new-to-the-scene authors such as Debbie Irving and Ben Winters are getting lots of attention. In nonfiction, with the smash hit Hamilton on Broadway, books about the Revolutionary War are hot again. And for younger readers, there's a new Harry Potter. Today in The Exchange, a perennial favorite on our show, our annual Summer Books Program. Let's hear from you. What's on your summer reading list? Or do you need some ideas to get your summer reading list going? The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. With me in studio are Dan Chartrand, owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter. Dan, welcome back. Good to see you.
It's great to be here, Laura.
Also with us, Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord. And Michael, welcome to you too. Good to see you.
Thank you, Laura.
Well, what's popping out at you guys from this summer's crop of books? And Dan, I'll start with you.
Oh, my gosh. Well, summer is always a great time for fiction, and there's so many. I mean, I'll lead with the hot book right now, Emma Klein's The Girls, which is kind of the latest entry in this dark fiction, girls gone bad, women gone bad. This is a recommendation from Steph Schmidt, who works in our shop.
Now, is that young adult or is it?
Oh, no.
Or it's for grown-ups?
No.
It's dark stuff.
And it's on both of your lists, by the way. And I want to let everybody know that all the books we talk about, all the recommendations from Dan and Michael and you, when you call in or send email, will be put on our website later, like I said. But this is on both your lists, Michael. So why do you guys like this so much?
Well, first of all, it's a real buzz book. The publisher recognized early on, I think back in January or February, that they had something special here. And they started circulating galleys to all the booksellers and promoting it at our annual conference, educational conference called Winter Institute. And they made sure that everybody got early reading copies. And it's a great novel. You'll be – if when you look at the author's photo, she's like – 12. I mean, she's like 20. Well, she's 27. But her prose is just so, you know, spectacular. She's a great storyteller. She's real natural. And here she delves into the story of the girls that were attracted to Charlie Manson.
Yikes.
Yeah, yikes indeed. Yeah,
I don't think I'll read that, Michael. Not
my
thing,
but
go ahead.
No, you should. Uh-uh. It's not your thing until you read it.
Oh, okay.
You know, because once you read it, you know, because of the quality of the storytelling – you know, you're just going to be, you know, enraptured with it. That's the thing about novels.
It tells the story of this 14-year-old girl who kind of is drawn to this group of young women. Her parents are getting divorced, and she's kind of like drawn to this group of young women. And it kind of goes bad from there.
Well, you know, Charles Manson, it's hard to imagine how it goes good.
But the 1960s, it was a time for seekers, and everybody thinks, oh, you know, positive vibes, Woodstock and all that. But it could take a really dark turn, and did. And this is a great fictionalized portrayal of what happened there.
So Emma Klein, is this her first book, Dan?
Yeah. I believe so.
Yeah, so she's sort of the breakout novelist of the summer, maybe.
You know, this is what the independent booksellers do so well. They take these great new authors that the publishers find. And we kind of bring them to the market and help to create new brand name goods. So Emma Klein is a new breakout author.
Okay, so another not new breakout author, but also on both of your lists, another woman author, Michael, Louise Erdrich, formerly of New Hampshire, now back in her home region of the Upper Midwest. And there's a book on both of your lists called La Rose.
La Rose, yeah. Well, first of all, we love Louise Erdrich because, like us, she owns an independent bookstore.
She does.
Birch Bark Books. Yep, that's right. And But we also love her because she's a great storyteller. Philip Roth said that she's one of our greatest storytellers, like Faulkner, one of the great American regionalists, he said, bearing the dark knowledge of her place as Faulkner did his. And it's true. Here you have a story about can a person do the worst thing possible and still be loved? I mean, it's about history, both Native American and white American.
Which is a common theme in Louise Erdrich's
books. Exactly, yeah. It's about the intersection of different types of faith. It's the one thing that – well, what happens – I mean, and it's not a spoiler. It sets itself up on the first page is that you have two neighbors that are very good friends, and one of them kills the other one's 5-year-old son in a hunting accident. And what happens next? I mean, it really is the worst thing you can think of. And there's tragedy in the story, and there's a surprising amount of humor. I mean, I always love it when Louise Erdrich, you know, starts with the old people cracking wise about with their dirty jokes and everything, and pop culture references. These are things, the hidden gems that you don't expect to find in a Louise Erdrich story, which you think is going to be all like literary and intense and dark and. But hyper-intellectual, but they're not. I mean, they're also just great stories and, a lot of fun to read.
Our store manager, Stephanie, is the best reader on our staff. She just is. She's also the best writer. And she wrote about this. I am not one to overuse the word stunning, but let me just say this book is absolutely stunning.
Wow. Oh, it really is, yeah.
All right. So, again, that's La Rose by Louise Erdrich on both of your lists. And there's a ton more fiction that I want to talk to both of you guys about. But first, Dan, to you real quick. So I always ask you this, but each year the answer is a little different. What sort of mood are folks in the summer when they come into your store, especially now with, well, it's kind of an uncertain political year and, right. and we've got Brexit and people wondering about the world economy and what sort of conversations you find yourself having with people when they're in your store trying to buy a book?
There's a fair amount of anxiety out there, I find. Some people are just tuning it out. They're kind of dealing with their anxiety by tuning out the populist moment we're in, the angry populist moment. But a lot of people are very anxious about it. They're very anxious about, is this going to change everything?
So do they want fun, happy books to take their minds off of it?
Well, first of all, we perform a community function in our store where we kind of we talk to them about that. But then we kind of try to diagnose where they are. And if they're looking for escape, we try to help them find that. If they want more information so they can digest what's going on, then we try to recommend some good nonfiction books or maybe even a novel that will give them perspective on the situation they find themselves in.
Michael?
Yeah, I would just say, on the escape thing, sure, people read sometimes for escape, and summer reading is a great time for that. But there's a trick because fiction is a great engine for figuring things out, figuring out how you think about the world, how you feel about current events, how you feel about yourself and your neighbors. And so while you're escaping, I mean, it's bringing you back. You know, it provides that context for you to be able to figure out what's going on in world events. I'm a great believer that fiction is the escape that brings you back.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And, it seems sometimes that fiction is downplayed as well. It's just fiction and it's just escape.
But well, what identifies us as humans other than the idea that we tell stories?
Right. A very smart talk show host, national talk show host, I heard speak at a conference once. And everybody said, well, what do you read? And he said, I read a ton of fiction because it helps you figure out sort of the human condition and the way things work or the way things could work or the way they used to work. Yeah, right. So a big cheerleader for fiction here.
President,
go ahead.
President Obama is our greatest reader that we've had in recent decades.
Yeah.
He reads quite a bit of fiction and did a brilliant interview with the writer from Iowa.
Marilynne Robinson.
Thank you. Yep. My brain here.
Well, on the idea again of fiction, one of my favorite genres, and you guys know this because we've talked a lot, is historical fiction. And you've got a big one, Dan, by Annie Proulx, another beloved author here in New Hampshire, although she's not from here, about French-Canadian history, kind of weaves together that whole story called Bark Skins.
Right. This is on my list because our bookseller, Marc de Carteret, a good French-Canadian name, He read it and loved it. He fell in love with it. And what I like about the idea of this book, I haven't read it, but is that it really kind of chronicles the destruction of these great forests across the northern part of North America. And she puts it in a very human scale, a very and a historical scale. And there's no greater issue that we're facing than climate change and the destruction of natural environments and species. So I think Annie Proulx has written an amazing – it's a real tome of a book.
It's a doorstop. Yeah. It really is. And it took her years to write, right, Dan?
That's right. Yeah. But Mark found this just engaging and – is recommending it highly to everyone.
She's the author of The Shipping News. People may remember, won the Pulitzer some years back. And
the story Brokeback Mountain that the film was based on.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. And the book starts in the late 17th century, two penniless young Frenchmen arriving in New France, and it goes forward all the way through time to the destruction of some of the forests in Canada. So real interesting stuff. So that's on your list. There's a couple books this time around, guys, about race and living in a multiracial society and biracial children. There's one called Homegoing. There's one called Grace. This is a familiar theme, Michael. We've been kind of exploring this issue for a while.
Sure. Well, one of the books that's on my list, actually, it's sort of about race, but it's also a way of telling the history of the United States. It's called White Trash by Nancy Eisenberg. It just came out, and I've only read a little bit of it, but it's fascinating. First of all, because I'm from rural Virginia, so you know, these are my people. It's the 400-year untold history of class in America.
That's a pretty controversial title, by the way.
I mean, sure. Well, you know, it says what it's about. What her idea is that you know most people were spoon-fed history as if we were toddlers, really. We're eager consumers of that kind of sanitized history. And what Ms. Eisenberg does is she subverts that. Our colonial beginnings were not just principled leaders, you know, that we erected statues to. A lot of the people that came to the United States were what early colonists were, surplus population. They were just kind of the refuse of, of
people
Europe.
People who've been let out of jail or debtor's prison.
Yeah, well, the indentured servants, sure. Vagrants, rebels, convicts, you know.
Okay, I had a French teacher in college who liked to remind me of that. The country was founded on sort of people who couldn't quite cut it in Europe and so forth.
And yet, a shining democracy emerged from that, you know, and there's always this push-pull between our ideals and our background.
Yeah, real interesting. And that's... Yeah. Nonfiction, by the way.
Definitely nonfiction.
If you need help putting your summer reading list together, today in The Exchange, it's our annual summer book show, the 2016 version, and let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. With the warm weather finally here, we're looking at what's new this season in books to enjoy on vacation, at the beach, in your own backyard. 1-800-892-6477. Tell us what's on your summer reading list, whether a new book or an old classic, or if you're looking for some books to add to that list, give us a call. We'll help you out. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. You know, one more question about this idea of, you know, race and its history in this country and how we're obviously still sorting it out. There's another book on your list, Michael, Underground Airlines. This is fiction. I'm fascinated by this. It depicts a U.S. where slavery still exists in four states.
The hard four, yeah. Yeah, it's coming out next week. July 5th is the publication date. And Ben Winters wrote The Last Policeman, which actually was set in Concord, New Hampshire.
Oh, now hold on. The Last Policeman. Yeah, yeah. That was a big splash about a year or two ago.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, a trilogy set in Concord about what happens when an asteroid is hurtling towards Earth and what happens to, you know, people, culture, you know. And, you know, great. It won the Edgar Award in 2012 for best, debut mystery. And here he has an alternative history where Lincoln was assassinated en route to his inauguration. And after his death, legislators come together with one last proposal to save the Union. So there's no civil war, but there's a compromise in which four states maintain slavery. And then fast forward to the present day, right? It's a great alternative history. I loved it, and it's coming out July 5th.
Yeah, what America is like in this alternative version of what would have happened.
Right.
Still slavery in four states. It's kind of chilling.
Yeah, in the fall, Colson Whitehead is also coming out with a book called The Underground Railroad, And so that's a big theme for summer and fall.
Well, I want to ask you, Dan, about another historical fiction, but it's a little different. This is taking place in Europe and America. The Last Painting of Sarah DeVos, one of those epic history slash fiction novels that takes you to a couple different eras and a couple different continents. And I love this sort of stuff.
This is this wonderful book that I'm recommending. There's a whole sort of genre, subgenre of books about, you know, the provenance of an object, whether it's a painting or a violin or – and this is one of those types of books. It's about the only painting that's known by this Dutch master who is one of the few women that was painting in the novel. And the painting is copied by a kind of starving young art historian who is also she basically repairs paintings, and she's hired to duplicate this painting, and it's swapped out for the real one. The real one's stolen, and the two paintings are now hurtling. It's 50 years later, and the two paintings are hurtling towards this museum. They're both being donated for an exhibit, or loaned for an exhibit. And the woman that's curating the exhibition in this Australian museum is none other than the woman that did the forged painting.
Oh, my goodness.
And is she going to be unmasked? And it's just this wonderful sort of history grinding its gears in a very personal way towards a conclusion. And I loved it. It's a wonderful book by a man named Dominic Smith, who lives down in Austin, Texas, and he's written a few other novels. But if you loved one of those books about, you know, like, okay, here's the provenance of this painting, this is for you.
It reminds me a little bit of that movie that came out about a year ago, Woman in Gold, about the Gustav Klimt painting that was in Austria and owned by a wealthy Jewish family, and then it got stolen by the Nazis forth. So
a little bit of fiction, this, you know, the provenance of an object.
Again, our number for you to join us on our summer book show, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. And gentlemen, let's go to Dylan in Plymouth. Hi, Dylan, you're on the Exchange. Welcome.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Dylan.
The book that I'm currently reading is called The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. And I just wanted to share how much it changed my life. It's kind of examining and revealing the hidden world of habits and how everybody is controlled by their subconscious patterns.
So have you broken up some of your habits since you started this, Dylan? Or?
Yeah. Yeah, the book talks about how a small win can snowball into a series of life-changing events, and it's helped me to save a lot of money so far.
Awesome. Well, everybody's all about that, right, Michael? You know, it's interesting.
Yeah,
I'm glad you called. I'm glad you called, Dylan. I was going to ask you guys, is summer really a time for sort of self-help kind of books, or is that more like the fall or first of the year and so forth?
It can be. I mean, I just think it's however the spirit moves you. If that's your project for the summer, go for it. If your project is to escape, go for that.
Yeah, and sometimes people do have projects over the summer. You know, this is the summer I'm going to explore such and such and so forth. Well, Dylan, thank you for the call. Did you want to jump in there too, Dan?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
All right. Here's an email that just came in. This is from Judy in Canterbury. She says, there's a lot of political books out there, but Thomas Frank's Listen, Liberal stands out. Frank, himself a progressive, looks at how a generation of Democratic leaders have lost touch with the needs of working Americans. I'm halfway through this book and loving it. A great read. Judy, thank you for that email. You can email us as well, exchange@nhpr.org. Michael, go ahead.
Thomas Frank is a great writer. This is a critique from the left, which, with the candidacy of Bernie Sanders has been very important this year. And I think it's a voice that hasn't been heard in our politics for a long time. And Thomas Frank, he's a wonderful writer, editor of The Baffler. He's been involved with Harper's Magazine. Very good writer.
Well, thank you for the call, Dylan. Thanks for the email, Judy. We'll take a lot more of your questions and comments after a short break. 1-800-892-6477. And if you can't get enough about books after the exchange, well, Word of Mouth is also putting on a book show today where they're celebrating the weird, inspirational, and maddening pursuit of becoming an author. All that's coming up. Stay with us. It's The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's a perennial favorite here on The Exchange. It's our summer book show. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. Tell us what's on your summer reading list, whether it's a new book or an old classic, or if you need help putting your summer reading list together, we will definitely be able to help you out. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And a reminder, all the books mentioned this hour, whether by our listeners or our guests, will be put on our website a little bit later, nhpr.org/exchange. So if you miss out on one of the titles or authors we're talking about, no worries. Just go to the website later, nhpr.org/exchange. Michael Herman's here, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, Dan Chartrand, owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter. And guys, let's finish up our fiction conversation. And a big favorite author of a lot of public radio listeners, Michael, is Richard Russo, recently featured on Word of Mouth. His latest book is called Everybody's Fool. He's popular here in New Hampshire.
Oh, he's very popular, yeah. Well, Everybody's Fool is the sequel 20 years later to a book called Nobody's Fool, which people might remember from having read it at the time, or they might remember from the movie starring Paul Newman as Sully. And Sully is one of the great comic inventions of modern fiction. He's irrepressible. He's a pain in the neck. He's a wisecracker. And he's a never-do-well. And just all the trouble that he gets himself into, it makes for hilarious reading. In Everybody's Fool, it's later, and a minor character from the first book has become a central character in the second one, Doug Raymer, who was a policeman in the first book and now is chief of police. It's, you know, Russo is one of – he's just a great comic writer. And if you want something fun to occupy yourself over the summer, that you can't go wrong with this 1-2 punch.
As fun is kind of where I'm at when it comes to summer reading.
Fun is good.
Well, another one, Dan, that I was real interested in on your list, The Mandibles.
The Mandibles is a book by Lionel Shriver, who is a wonderful author. She wrote What Do We Do About Kevin? I'm getting that title slightly wrong, but
Right.
And it was made into a frightening film. But
sure was.
This is a frightening book for a different reason. She's kind of looking forward into the future, the years 2029 to 2047. And she follows this family, the Mandibles, who are struggling to deal with currency fluctuations and the way in which that's basically impoverished the United States economy.
So they're a wealthy family, but there's world economic turmoil.
They thought they were wealthy. They were all counting on the grandfather's inheritance, but it turned out nobody had money because of deficits and basically profligate political parties kind of ruining the American economy. But there's this one character in this book, this young man who is kind of a savant, who kind of figures out the economy from his seat in the midst of this family. And he's a teenager at the beginning of the book, and then he grows into young adulthood. And he basically steers this family to safety. And it's – or, you know, safe harbor as much as you can in a world that Lionel Shriver has created. It's a wonderful book. While at the same time being utterly frightening.
Well, so it's about this family. Everybody thought, okay, we're going to be fine, thanks to Grandpa. And then it turns out not to be the case. So it's kind of how each member of this family navigates that new terrain.
Right. And Grandpa becomes kind of a sniveling wretch. And the young man who is sort of absorbing all this information about the economy, he and is a bit of a savant. He just kind of like figures it out and cracks the code on how to move forward.
Lots of folks wanting to jump in on our conversation. Guys, again, our summer book show. So join us with questions or comments or recommendations of your own. 1-800-892-6477. And Kelly's joining us from Hampton. Hi, Kelly. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
I'm a librarian in Campton, New Hampshire.
Campton,
actually,
I apologize. Okay.
That's all right. And like you, I'm a big fan of historical fiction. And one of the books that's just come into our library that a lot of people seem to be enjoying is the new one by Chris Cleave. He's the writer of Little Bee and Gold, and he has one called Everyone Brave is Forgiven. And it's a World War II love story, but it's not your typical story. It was inspired by his grandparents, and he's such a wonderful writer. it's about, I don't want to give too much away, but it's about a teacher who's taking care of the children who are not evacuated in the evacuation that happens before the Blitz.
Oh, in London, okay.
In London. And so she's teaching these children that are kind of misfits and disabled children and children of color that were not evacuated. So I learned something I hadn't known about.
Right. We all have those images of those, you know, adorable, frightened children getting on trains and being shuttled to the English countryside. So these are about the kids who stay behind.
Right. So this
what's
is,
the other book,
The other one
Kelly?
Is I Let You Go by Claire McIntosh. And this is a modern-day story. It's about a mother who loses a child in a hit-and-run. And I won't give anything away, but it's the first time that I have literally gasped aloud at a twist in the story. It has a plot twist in the middle of the book that is just mind-blowing. So I won't say any more than that, but it's a really, really well-written book, and a lot of people are enjoying that, too.
Well, you're a pro, Kelly, for not giving it away. intriguing us, but no spoiler alert here. So thank you so much for calling in. Good to hear from a librarian.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You know, we've been talking, guys, a lot about the new offerings, but sometimes summer is an opportunity to pick up that book that you never got around to, that classic that somehow you just never had time, and all of a sudden maybe you do have time. What do you think, Michael? What's a classic summer book that seems ripe for the reading in summer?
Well, you know, you can just pick a book off your shelf, something you bought 20 years ago.
Right.
Maybe you were in college. You know, did you really never get to Tolstoy?
Right.
I mean, now's the time. One classic that that has been in the news, in the book news lately, is Joseph Mitchell, who was a staff writer for The New Yorker back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and into the 60s. And he was probably one of the best writers The New Yorker ever produced. Jill Lepore, who's a professor at Harvard, has picked up, has done kind of a riff on Joseph Mitchell's most famous story about Joe Gould, who was a famous, like, vagrant, itinerant, but also, you know, beloved literary figure. He was a homeless guy who was, like, sort of adopted by people like E.E. Cummings and Ezra Pound and William Carlos Williams, and just a famous New York figure who supposedly was working on a huge oral history of the United States,
the
focusing
biggest oral history the biggest, ever,
yeah,
right?
9 million
everything
words, supposedly.
That was
everything.
Said every, in this guy's life.
Yeah. And he was supposedly writing it down, and he had, like, you know, huge stores of writing in various places, but nobody, for some reason, nobody ever saw it. And Joseph Mitchell wrote about it twice, once in the 40s and once after, after Joe Gould's death, I believe. And the interesting thing about this story that Jill Lepore gets into is it really goes down the rabbit hole into whether this book ever existed or not. And also the strange mirroring between Joe Gould and Joseph Mitchell. Joseph Mitchell saw some of himself in this vagrant who was just a pretender, apparently, Joe Gould. And it's a fascinating literary story, and it brings us back to a classic, which is Joseph Mitchell's collected writing. You can find it in a book called Up in the Old Hotel. I have my old hardcover right here.
And it's so you can read both at the same time.
Yeah, it's if you want to learn about what New York was like in the 40s, 30s, 40s, 50s, you should read Joseph Mitchell. So that's definitely a classic that we're recommending. And famously, after he wrote his last article about Joe Gould, Joseph Mitchell never wrote another scrap that was ever published. He went to work for 30 years. He went to work at the New Yorker, went to his office, closed the door. People, like, maybe every once in a while heard the sound of a typewriter, or maybe he asked for more paper once, but for 30 years he never published another word. It's a fascinating mystery story.
So did Joe Gould win Joseph Mitchell over to the oral tradition?
Well, possibly.
We'll have to read and find out. Well, Joe Gould's Teeth is the name of the book. Kind of
it,
a funny
it is.
Title, but
it is.
That's the new book by Jill Lepore.
Yeah.
Jill Lepore is a Harvard professor, and she and her students just kind of went down the rabbit hole into this research, and she did a lot of research in Widener Library just looking for this oral history. And she never, well, you know, she never quite finds it. But maybe it's still out there.
Well, and she wrote that Wonder Woman book five or 6 years ago that everybody
Secret
liked
History
so
of
much.
Wonder Woman, yeah.
Let's go back to our listeners. And then there's a couple other on the nonfiction list that are on both of your lists. So we'll talk about those in just a second. But let's go to Anne in Pembroke. Hi, Anne. You're on The Exchange. Welcome. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have two boys, 10 and 14, who are avid readers. They have plowed through all the Percy Jackson stuff. Now, I grew up in a family of girls with Little House on the Prairie and stuff like this. But they're very into fantasy stuff. I'd love to have a book, preferably a classic.
Preferably a series with 10 in it, right?
Yeah, and so I'd love to have a book we could all read together this summer. I'm coming up with a blank because all they want is like sci-fi fantasy stuff.
Well, and Anne, I'm so glad you called because, first of all, I grew up in a family of all girls. I have two boys in that sort of teen years, and we love the Percy Jackson series. And we've milked it to death. We've all read it, you know, multiple times. So I really appreciate the call, and am very interested in what our guests have to say for you and for me. Go ahead, Dan Chartrand.
Well, Alice, who works at our store, she's recommending a book called The Wild Robot by Peter Brown. It's a new it's kind of middle reader, but it might work for the 14-year-old as well. It's sweetly illustrated. Feels like a combination of Hatchet by Gary Paulsen, the movie WALL-E, with the animal parts of Lion, Witch, and Wardrobe thrown in. It's a story with
That's
morals.
A mashup.
Yeah. It's a story with morals about the meaning of family, friends, and survival. So The Wild Robot by Peter Brown would be Alice Ahn's recommendation from our shop.
So it's one book, not part of a longer series, unfortunately.
It just was published, so maybe more to come, but one right now.
I've got a suggestion. If they like sci-fi fantasy type books, The Fifth Wave by an author named Yancey. The premise is what happens if aliens come to Earth and try to conquer us. And it's not a spoiler to suggest that really they kind of clean our clocks in the first 10 pages. And then what happens next? And this is a young adult series. And I think – I'm not sure – I don't think the third one is out yet. I believe it's a trilogy.
Actually, it has released.
Has it just released?
Yeah, okay. It did just release.
Okay. So while we're talking about young adult and kids – you know what I'm going to ask, Michael?
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter. We need to caution this. It's not, you know, another giant tome that you can, you know, spend days and days reading on the couch, but there is a new Harry Potter.
Well, after the first seven, people have just been, you know, thirsting for more of this story, even though it's wrapped up pretty, you know, very well after the seven books.
Maybe not so well.
Possibly. this is actually a play. This is going to be a play that's published that's based on an original new story by J.K. Rowling coming out July 31st.
The play hits the West End in London at the beginning of July. The book is being published on the 31st. It is the script of the play. So let's be very upfront. The book that's being published at the end of this month that people are getting very excited about is the script of a play that's opening in the West End on London. Having said that, we are seeing incredible demand for this book. People reread the seven books and over again. And to have something new in the narrative thread is very exciting for the folks that won't stop rereading. So even though it is a script of a play, we have many pre-orders, and we're doing a midnight party because my staff is insisting on it. So I'm just like – I want to be like very clear. This is the script of a play. But people are really jacked up about this.
They are. It's a story about – we don't know a whole lot about it because it's embargoed. The content is embargoed. But what we do know is that Harry Potter's now an adult. He's an overworked employee at the Ministry of Magic. He's a father of three school-age children, and he's struggling.
See at the end of the last movie.
And he's grappling with his past. His youngest son, Albus is struggling also with the weight of a family legacy that he can't – he never wanted, but he can't deny. And so father and son make some sort of narrative journey together through this play. But we don't know what it is yet because there have been no leaks of this content.
But it's written as a play script. So when I open it, it's not going to be
– I want to know who's holding the Marauder's map and who has the invisibility cloak. That's what I want to know. Who's got those things?
I always wanted the invisibility cloak myself.
Well, a couple more recommendations from our listeners. Here's an email from David. He says, I've been hearing a lot about the Outlander series, so I started reading the series by Diana – I might pronounce this wrong –
Gabaldon.
Okay. And is that – fiction? It sounds like fiction.
It's very, very fictional.
Science fiction?
Yeah. Well, yeah. We shelve it in straight fiction, but it is a time travel story.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
So we shelve it in fantasy, so there you go.
Well, thank you, David. The Outlander series, again, by Diana Say it again.
Gabaldon.
Gabaldon. Okay. And here's somebody saying, Tom from Rye, with debates on immigration consuming the airwaves, have either of your guests read or wish to comment on NPR colleague Tom Gelton's book called A Nation of Nations? It provides enormous perspective to the shifts in immigration in our population that have occurred in the past 50 years. And Tom, thank you for that. I will say we interviewed Tom Gelton, gosh, a while ago, a couple months ago on this, and then I took a vacation day recently, and we rebroadcast the show because it was such a good conversation with Tom. So thank you, Tom from Rye, for that email. Let's go back to the callers, guys. And Fred joins us from Portsmouth. Hi, Fred. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I do have a recommendation, The Little Red Chairs by Edna O'Brien. And a couple of things. Harold Bloom says we read books to meet people. And this is a case where there's the protagonist in this book is just a fascinating person whose destruction and reconstruction of her life is basically what takes place in the book.
And so fiction, I'm guessing, right?
Sounds like, yes,
yeah.
It is fiction.
Fred.
Sorry.
Sure.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. Little Red Chairs by Edna O'Brien, because we're putting
our
website.
And it reminds me a little bit of The Ballad of Woggy March by Saul Bellow from years ago, where we do follow that one character through the book more than what you'd call a big plot of a novel, so to speak. It's the fate of the person internally as much as anything else that we follow. So,
okay. Fred, thank you very much, for calling in. And Dan, you want to jump in?
Well, just to affirm what he's saying, I witnessed two of our patrons who had never met each other in our store having a very passionate discussion about the Edna O'Brien book you just mentioned. So it's out there.
Yeah, and I also think the caller mentioned Saul Bellow. And speaking of classics that, maybe could be read over the summer, one of the funniest books ever is Henderson the Rain King by Saul Bellow. I just love that book. That would be a good revival.
There's another nonfiction book on both of your lists, guys, that I did want to ask you about. Another writer who a lot of people love here in New England, Voyager, Dan, by Russell Banks. Now, that's nonfiction on both of your lists.
Right. And I'm going to let Michael talk about this, but
sure.
I'll just give a brief introduction. Russell Banks is a great fiction writer, and this is a collection of his travel writings, and he's quite a traveler as well.
Yeah. And the opening piece is in Voyager is was new to me. It's a novella-length essay about – and it opens up, a man who's been married four times has a lot of explaining to do. And over the course of
– so that's Richard Russo talking about himself.
No, Russell Banks.
I'm sorry,
Russell Banks, yeah.
That's a true statement.
Yeah, I think it is. And over the course of travels through the Caribbean, he weaves together a story, the story of his marriages, of his life, of his travels in the Caribbean. And the Caribbean is very vividly evoked in this book. I love the island of St. John. He describes that very well. He's got a lot of ties to Jamaica. But and just the writing is so vivid. It's just a journey of exploration that's wonderful to encounter. Just for the opening essay alone, it's worth buying. But also the other essays are very fine.
Dan, do you want to jump in?
No, I just – Mark DeCarteret has read this. He's a longtime fan of all of Russell Banks's writing, and he insisted that this be included in our nonfiction book.
So much just self-deprecating humor in Voyager. Just such a hard-won self-awareness. It's really a great, great book.
Well, a couple emails from listeners. Carol in Brookfield says she's reading a series by David Downing. The first book is named Zoo Station, a World War II journalist. These are novels. Excellent read. Takes place mainly in Berlin. Thank you, Carol, for that email. And you can send us your emails as well at exchange@nhpr.org. More on summer books in just a minute. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our annual summer book show. We're looking at what's new this season in books to enjoy at the beach, in the mountains, on vacation, in your own backyard. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. What type of book are you looking for this summer? Or what's already on your summer reading list? Again, let's hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, all of the books mentioned this hour, including the lists offered by our guests, will be put on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. So if you don't quite get one of the titles that we're talking about, don't worry. Just go to the website a little bit later, NHPR.org, excuse me, NHPR.org/exchange, and check it out. So Dan Chartrand, Michael Herman, one more that's on both of your lists this year, The Gene, An Intimate History. Dan, you want to tackle that one?
This is by Siddhartha, and I'll get the last name wrong, but Mukherjee. And
well done.
Yeah, there you go. I slurred that. And it's he's an amazing writer. He's had some previous great nonfiction books, but this is a book that illuminates the quest to decipher the master code of instructions that makes and defines humans. And it's just – it's amazing writing. It's rare. A lot of people think, oh, nonfiction books, I read them for the information. But this guy just writes so well. And again, Alice, who works on her staff, is just passionate about this book and is trying to get everyone to read it, even if they're not interested in science, just for the quality of the writing.
The author wrote The Emperor of All Maladies
a few years
ago, which was the history of cancer, actually. And this is sort of a prequel to that book because – what creates cancer is problems with the gene. So, and it's this. The gene is also a personal story because the author has some family history of mental illness and other problems that are probably genetic in nature but aren't fully understood. And so, it's not just science writing; it's also personal.
Ah, that is interesting. Okay, so one more nonfiction, and then I want to ask you a little bit more about kids because we haven't covered quite enough there. This one is not on your list, guys, but featured recently on our sister program, Word of Mouth, and I thought it was interesting. But what if we're wrong? The idea of just, taking all the assumptions that we have about how the world works, including gravity, for goodness sake, and just saying, okay, we've been wrong before. What if we're wrong? Have you guys heard of this? Are you selling it? Is it on your shelves or...
I have not heard of it.
You have not heard of this? Okay,
there's a new one.
It's
new to me, but certainly the answer to that question is we're always wrong. That's the nature of science. We're always wrong. We're always groping towards the truth.
Here's an email from Nancy who says she's got a recommendation for kids. Harriet the Spy, a classic I've read every year since I was a preteen. It's a book I give as a gift to children in the family, a story of an independent, strong young girl on daily adventures and dealing with choices and friendships. And Nancy, thank you so much. I read this probably 10 times at least when I was a kid and read it to my boys, which even though you might think, well, maybe they wouldn't like it, they loved it as well. So that's a good one. That's a good one. Thank you. Go ahead, Dan.
A great list of books that will become the next generation's Harriet the Spy are on the Great Stone Face list. The Great Stone Face Award program is something that the children's librarians of the state of New Hampshire. They run this contest every year, and basically late elementary school and early middle school students read as many of the 20 to 25 books on the list as they can, and they vote for their favorite book. And that book is the Great Stone Face book for that year. The contest to vote is important, but what's more important is that these kids are just turned on to reading this set of 25 books and judging which one really deserves their vote. So many, late elementary school, early middle school students read these books and go through the list and like, oh, I read 15 of the 25 Great Stone Face. It's a great program that the school librarians in New Hampshire run. And I can't speak about it highly enough. I wanted to plug the program. I brought a sample of the books. Some of the great books that are on the list are The Blackthorn Key by Kevin Sands, Lost in the Sun by Lisa Graff. They include graphic novels, comic books for kids as well, because that's a great gateway for young people to read. So two of the books that are on the Great Stone Face list this year that are graphic novels are Roller Girl by Victoria Jameson and Awkward by Svetlana Chamakova.
Well done.
There you go. But I mean, it's an amazing list of books that's been curated by the elementary and middle school librarians of the state of New Hampshire, and they put this contest together, and it's so important for the reading, sort of the reading life of this state.
Yeah, the librarians do a great job with the Great Stone Face list. For younger kids, there's a Ladybug Awards for best picture books. And for older kids, Isinglass and Flume are two awards that that the librarians collaborate on. So they cover all the ages. But the Great Stoneface is the largest and most popular list. We have I'm sure you do too, Dan. We have displays of the candidates and the winners up in the store for people.
That's
to look
interesting. I'm so glad you mentioned that, Dan, because not only in the general interest of getting kids reading over the summer, but I'd seen that, Michael, out of the corner of my eye at your store, but you know, I didn't take the time to read it, so I didn't really even know what that was all about. So,
yeah, and one of the wonderful things is the winner this past year was one of the graphic novel selections about a young woman who is having trouble hearing. So it had this great social impact as well, and made students more aware of, you know, differently abled people. And it's just it's a great program.
Here's another recommendation that came from a listener. This is for people who are still feeling bereft now that Downton Abbey is over. Margaret in Concord says this nonfiction book by historian Adrian Tinniswood reveals the reality of English country houses' lifestyles between World War I and World War II. Sounds familiar, right? Many of the purchasers and restorers of the grand houses were Americans. Fascinating details about extravagance and the scandals of the household. Very entertaining. Margaret says, Anglophiles and Downton Abbey fans will especially enjoy The Long Weekend. Okay, so that's that one. So if you're missing Downton Abbey, nice. Well, that's for you. Thank you so much, Margaret,
funny,
for that one.
The historian Simon Sharma got very grumpy about Downton Abbey and the craze for it. He said, you know, history should not be just a nostalgia trip that makes you comfortable. You know, it should be something that makes you uncomfortable. I'm paraphrasing here, but I was a fan of Downton Abbey. I confess it.
Well, and you know, with all the political tumult that we talked about earlier in the world, why not
have an escapist
time in the British countryside? Here's another recommendation. Someone on Facebook says, "Far from the Tree" by Andrew Solomon. No more information there, but that's another one. So we're putting out all the recommendations.
Great recommendations.
Yeah, from our listeners, from our guests, and so forth on our website again. NHPR.org/exchange. Let's go back to our callers, guys, and Francis is in Bedford. Hi, Francis. Go ahead. You're in the exchange.
Yes, good morning. I have a book from last year that I'm sure all your bookstore owners are familiar with. It's written by a woman named Ayan Hirsi Ali, and it's called Heretic, Why Islam Needs a Reformation Now. She was born in Somalia, raised in Saudi Arabia, is a lifelong Muslim. But she looks at her religion, and by the way, she now teaches at the Harvard Kennedy School. She said that a religious reformation is the only way to end the terrorism, sectarian warfare, and repression of women and minorities that each year claim thousands of lives throughout the Muslim world. And it is foolish to insist, as our leaders habitually do, including President Obama, that the violent acts of Islamic extremists can be divorced from the religious doctrine that inspires them. Instead, we need to confront the fact that this violence is driven by a political ideology embedded deep in Islam itself. It is not essentially a religion of peace.
So you're reading from the book there, Francis, right?
I just read the two, I'm sorry, but just
Okay.
Two things from the inside jacket. It's
sure.
A brilliant book, and it's not too technical, but based on what's happening in the political realm right now, and Donald Trump saying we need to block all Muslims, which is a terrible thing to say, it would give everybody who wants to know what's going on a very thorough understanding of Islam, what's happening within the religion, and why a certain segment of it does want to change the entire world and convert all of us to Muslims. Meet her sometime. She's
yeah. Brilliant. Well, maybe you guys get her to your bookstore. It's called Heretic. And Francis, thank you for the recommendation.
Well, it's a book that sold very well in our store, for obvious reasons. And I think the impulse to look at the foundations of all world religions and to try to find the core message that is true for all world religions, that it's about loving our neighbor as ourself. And just this morning we saw Pope Francis talk about the need for the Catholic Church to not only acknowledge people of who love whomever, but also to apologize to them for how the church has treated them. So I think this impulse to critique world religions and by members of those religions and to get to the core message, it's a great thing to do. And
so it's been selling at your store.
It has.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, ours too, Laura. Yeah, she's an important voice coming, you know, from Islam.
Okay. Thank you so much, Francis, for calling in. Here's another kids recommendation from Ginger. She says, when I was a kid, I used to read a series by Edward Eger, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. He was an author writing in the 1950s. There's a series of 7 novels all about magic, imagination, and summer fun. I reread Magic by the Lake, one of the books in this series, every summer. Adults will like it for the nostalgia. Children will love it for the creativity and wonder. So that's a kids' series. Magic by the Lake is one of those. Half Magic, I think, Half is the magic. Series. Is that right? Okay.
It is, yeah. And actually, I think if memory serves, that had gone out of print for a few years. And then I'll never forget the excitement that some readers greeted it when I think it's Harcourt republished those about 10 years ago.
Wow. Okay. So thanks, Ginger, for the email very much. And Michael, one more book for kids, middle readers. This was on your list, a book for middle readers about a family member who struggles with heroin addiction. Wow, that's weighty stuff for middle schoolers.
Well, it's certainly, very timely for New Hampshire readers. Kate Messner wrote a book called The Seventh Wish, which is it's a novel-length riff on the old story, The Fisherman and His Wife, which was, explored for adults by Gunter Grass in his book The Flounder some years ago. But this is for middle readers. And Charlie goes ice fishing with his pal. He catches a fish who says it will grant her wishes and returns for its release. Charlie wants some control over her life. She keeps hooking the fish, even as she learns, as her predecessors did in fairy tales, that the wording matters. The heroin addiction is
the wording of
the
wish.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's the theme of heroin addiction is very gently handled. I mean, it's not outrageous. It's definitely a book that's written for middle graders. Even so, there was some controversy about this because the author, Kate Messner, had been disinvited at the last minute by a Vermont elementary school because of the theme. So there was some controversy about it. And I believe they're working that out. But, even in a book like this, the debate is always what's appropriate for what group of readers.
Well, and guys, hard to believe, but we only have a couple minutes left. So, and you have a ton of books in front of us. And I want everybody to know we're going to post a picture of Michael and Dan with these beautiful books that they are surrounded by. But just to wrap it up, so other books, Michael, first of all, that you just absolutely want to make sure we know about for all summer reading.
Well, there's 4 things that, sometimes we get a little into the weeds, when we're talking about books that we love. If the intent of the show is to talk about books that it's great to take to the beach, I have 4 recommendations here, and I won't have time to describe them, but just take it from me. These are the 4 of the best summer reads that you'll ever encounter.
And these will be on our website, no worries there.
The first, Before the Fall by Noah Hawley. Plane takes off from Martha's Vineyard, never makes it. One of the passengers swims to shore with a 4-year-old boy, and what happens next? One of the greatest opening scenes since Dennis Lehane wrote about Babe Ruth in The Given Day. To me, it just grabs you right away. It's a perfect book for summer. You have John Hart, Redemption Road. He's the only guy who ever won back-to-back Edgars for a novel. This is a book that took him 5 years to write because he couldn't get the voices right. Finally, he did. It's a great read, great summer read, Redemption Road. Then you have Modern Lovers by Emma Straub, a little more, a little lighter, frothier, great book for the summer, and then Dodgers by Bill Beverly, which is sort of like The Wire goes to the Midwest. I'm sorry, we only have a little bit of time.
That's a great description. Yeah. The Wire goes to the Midwest. Yeah.
Well, okay, so give us a little bit more on that last one then, because I know you really liked it.
Well, a teenage boy, 15 years old, his nickname is East. He messes up. He's supposed to be a lookout for a place where they're selling drugs. Something bad happens. He's sent on a mission to the Midwest by an older relative to kill a witness in a case. And these boys have never been out of Los Angeles before. They wear like Dodgers shirts. That's why. That's where the title comes from.
Okay, the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Yep.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Very, very fun read. I think it's a first novel, too. Bill Beverly wrote that.
Dan?
So I'll recommend some great history books. How's that?
Nathaniel Philbrick.
I've got 3.
One of my favorites.
Nathaniel Philbrick's new book, Valiant Ambition. George Washington, Benedict Arnold, and the Fate of the American Revolution. Great book from the author of Mayflower and In the Heart of the Sea. Another great book on the Revolution by George C. Dawn called Revolution on the Hudson, The Importance of the Hudson River Valley and New York City in the American War of Independence. And finally, there's a great World War II book called The Matthews Men, 7 Brothers and the War Against Hitler's U-Boats by William Giroux. And it's about a family of merchant marines who basically fought the war in the Atlantic trying to move material to Europe. and how they defeated Hitler's U-boats. It's a great kind of it's a great follow up to Boys in the Boat. If you like that book,
I did read Boys in the Boat.
And my last
one,
great. I would be remiss if I didn't talk about New Hampshire's best selling author, Joe Hill, has written The Fireman. It went right to number one on the New York Times bestseller
list. Really?
That was great to
and
see, wasn't it?
It's partly set in New Hampshire, and it's this great sort of apocalyptic novel about folks that get this spore called dragon scale.
Oh, yeah.
And eventually
they
spontaneously combust, and the fireman is trying to save the world. And Joe Hill has written a cracking good novel.
What is it about spontaneous combustion this year? Smoke by Dan Valletta also has, you know, smoke pouring out of people.
I could make a comment about the election this fall, but I'll pass.
Don't.
Let's not.
Well, a couple more recommendations from our listeners. Maureen in Concord says, my sons enjoyed the T.A. Barron book about a magician predating Harry Potter, but fun, and there are several.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of the Merlin books. Yeah.
Okay, so thank you, Maureen, for that one. Here's one that I also heard about. This is an email from Sue. Just finished reading a newly released novel by first-time author Homegoing by Ya Gayasi. I'm going to pronounce that
that's
wrong.
That's on my list.
Yeah.
Stephanie loved that book. She actually said about that book, it was an honor to read this book, and it has an amazing blurb from the author Ta-Nehisi Coates, who was last year's runaway nonfiction bestseller. Homegoing is an inspiration, according to Ta-Nehisi Coates. It tells multi-generational story of the African migration to the North America, the forced migration, and it just tries to get the history right in the form of fiction.
And it's interesting, we always say homecoming, but this is homegoing. So right. I'm guessing there's a reason for that. Guys, this is great. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful summer. And I'll try and read as much as possible.
Thank you, Laura.
Okay.
Thank you, Laura.
Take care. Dan Chartrand, owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter. Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord. Again, all the books mentioned this hour will be put on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. And if you can't get enough of books today, Word of Mouth is also putting on a book show. They're going to talk about the weird process and pursuit of becoming an author. That's today at 2 on NHPR and at wordofmouthradio.org. This is The Exchange on NHPR.